land of ours is under attack. The time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just wait and see, don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by, watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my power, don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land. From sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey everybody, welcome back into the show. Second hour of Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. This first day of March 2024 edition. I got a text message during the break before we get into our history lesson. Jennifer Standifer, she is the treasurer for the Michigan Republican Party. She said, I want to be clear, due to the judge's ruling, Judge Rossi's ruling on Tuesday, I will not be showing up in Detroit. So that comes from Jennifer, the treasurer of the Michigan Republican Party. So joining us right now, Pastor Chatfield, your text message, the Cold War, is this what you're teaching in class right now?
Yes, it is.
Now, one of the things I find interesting as I look at the calendar, and it's amazing, I can follow you in my mind like clockwork, as now we're into March, heading into spring, wrapping up, getting into the U.S. history portion anyway, world history, if you will. Basically, that now this is the time of year that you're what, in probably the 1950s?
Close, yes. In one of my classes, we are into the Cold War. Another one, we're still in World War II. And so there you go. The Cold War basically dominated United States foreign policy from about 1947 to 1991, or you could even back it up a little bit, 1945 to 1990 or 1991. I mean, it was, you know, that was, we viewed everything through the lens of the communist threat from the Soviet Union. Virtually everything we did in foreign policy was from that perspective. Okay, so I guess I'll start. Okay, World War II is coming to an end. Now, even before World War II was coming to an end, George Patton was telling Eisenhower, who was in communication, I'm sure, with FDR, then later Truman, don't trust the Soviets. They're gonna promise full and free elections in Eastern Europe. At Yalta, Stalin pledged that he would, which was the last of the war conferences between the big three. Originally, the big three would have been FDR, Churchill, and Stalin, but at the end, it was Truman, who would become president upon the death of FDR near the end of World War II. And so, but Stalin had said, "We're gonna let the Eastern European nations decide for themselves." So, because the German Reich, the Thousand Year Reich, which lasted about 12 years, was crumbling. The Allies were coming in from the West. They had now crossed the Rhine, and the Soviets were coming in from the East, and they were filled with fury. People were running to the Americans because they knew that they would get treated better than they would by the Soviets. But it was decided that the Soviets would have the honor to go into Berlin first, and Truman kind of held off the Americans, say, let them take Berlin. And as they were coming in from the east, all the countries that they were that they had gone through to get to Germany eventually would come under their thumb. Of course, they did not allow for free and fair elections. But all those countries in Eastern Europe, I mentioned them last week, I named a few, Poland, the eastern part of Germany, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Hungary, they all would become part of the East, the Eastern Bloc, dominated by the Soviet Union. That just is what happened. We should have known better, but that's what happened. So now we're going to be in a Cold War for the next 45 years.
And we're going to talk about statements made by Vladimir Putin yesterday. Got a breaking news story on that as well. Ties right in with the history lesson. We'll be right back.
The Sioux Animal Hospital in Sioux St. Marie has been in the same location for 35 years. The owner, Dr. Jeff, specializes in providing all aspects of care for your animals. From annual shots to complicated bone and soft tissue surgeries, Dr. Jeff can take care of any animal. So call him today at 906-635-5910. From dogs and cats to cows and horses, Dr. Jeff loves them all. So give him a call at 906-635-5910.
Next time you need tires for your car, don't compromise. Michelin Passenger Tires strive to deliver outstanding safety, long tread life, and excellent fuel efficiency. Plus, they're famous for delivering a quiet, comfortable ride and precision handling to help ensure optimum safety for you and your passengers. Outfit your car with tires that deliver everything. Ask about Michelin Tires. Royal Tire and Petoskey has the right set of Michelin tires for whatever you drive. Stop in and see us today. Specific performance may vary by tire model.
LegendarySystems.net now offers affordable remote tech support for your computer, the same service that large companies have been using for years. To discuss your needs and pricing, call us at 231-818-8349. Don't take your computer in for repairs. Let us do it remotely. Again, call us today at 231-818-8349.
My name is Todd Spalber. I'm running to be your state representative in the 106th District. One of the reasons that I am running is because our current public education system is failing our children. I support real, common sense policies and approaches to education and the safety of our children. All parents have a right to decide on their children's education, not the government or unions. I will fight to ensure that. After all, they are our most precious resources we have, and they are worth the fight. Vote for me, Todd Spalber, electsmalenberg.com. Paid for by Todd Spalber for state rep.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. I support this show, and I would like to offer you our biggest discounts for listening. So please go to our website, MyPillow.com, and put in the promo code at the end of this message to get the biggest discounts. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.
Thanks, Mike. Folks, go to MyPillow.com and enter the promo code TruckerRandy, or call 800-654-9659.
I am Dr. Sherry O'Donnell, running for U.S. Senate. As a missionary physician who's traveled the world, I've seen refugee crisis. Our open borders are causing a national refugee crisis. The failed Biden administration is paying illegal immigrants to enter our country and bring disease, terrorism, trafficking, inflation, and crime. As your next U.S. Senator, I have the international experience to close our borders and secure our homeland. I'm Dr. Sherry O'Donnell and am prepared to close the floodgates. Paid for by Dr. Sherry for Senate.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of our history lesson, the Cold War. And breaking email that just got sent to the radio station from National Review, Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday, yesterday, threatened Western nations with the prospect of nuclear war, saying Moscow has the ability to strike, quote, targets in their territory, end quote, if they continue supporting Ukraine. This is kind of an interesting topic of your discussion history lesson that you're teaching the class. While I would argue, I think we're still in a Cold War with Russia. I mean, for him to come out and saying that these targets are in your territory, Western nations, and if you continue to support Ukraine and fund them, this is what he continues to say. People must realize that we also have weapons that can hit targets in their territory. All this really threatens a conflict with the use of nuclear weapons and possibly the destruction of our entire civilization. Don't they get that? And this was yesterday this guy said this.
Okay, it is true. There are still thousands of nuclear weapons that are ready to be deployed, launched at a moment's notice. We're not at the height of the Cold War anymore, but it, by what you just read, yeah, the threat is still there. It always has been. What everybody is decrying is not that the threat's there, but that he actually mentioned it. That's
right.
That's what really, you know, amps things up. But it's never ceased. Not really.
Was this type of rhetoric prevalent at the time when the Cold War first started? Was it in the middle? Tell me basically,
yes.
when did it all start, this type of statements coming, you know, out of Russia?
Well, to begin with, after World War II, we were the only country that had the bomb. And so we thought for a while, look, we've got the bomb, they don't. But they had an active, very active spy ring. And they basically stole our secrets. And we only found that out a little bit later. In 1948, a guy named Whitaker Chambers, who was a former communist spy, testified that a guy named Elger Hiss, a State Department official with Roosevelt Truman, at least Roosevelt in the 1930s, was able to pass secret documents on to the Soviet Union. He was a bona fide spy. But in 1950, two members of a different spy ring, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, were convicted of giving atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, and they were executed in 1953. So by the about 1950, then in the mid-50s, they had the bomb. So whatever security we thought we had for about 5 years after World War II, we lost. We're not the only country with the bomb. Now, they were behind us in a lot of ways, though. They didn't have the bombers like we had. We had a lot of different bombers, and we kept upgrading. And the Soviets kept upgrading. Through the 50s, the 60s, 70s, they were upgrading, and we were finding out new, more ways. There was a time in the 1960s and 1970s that at any given time, there were numerous, maybe dozens, I'd have to relook this up, but there were B-52s flying around up there around the Arctic Circle, ready at any moment to drop bombs, atomic weapons, on the Soviet Union. And they had bombers up in the air. I mean, it was always, 24/7 for decades, we had these B-52 bombers that were just cruising around, waiting for the order. That was part of the Cold War. Now, we also started to develop ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, a quicker way, missiles out in the western part of the United States, and we could shoot missiles across the North Pole to targets in the Soviet Union. And they started to do the same thing. So what was targeted? Cities and their missile silos. Just like us, our cities were targeted. Our missile silos were targeted. And then we had an advantage in nuclear power submarines that had the ability to launch nuclear weapons. So we had bombers always in the air. We had these missile silos that we're always upgrading the accuracy of these missiles. And then we had submarines. And they did the same. This is what you call an arms race. This is an arms race. The more, the better. And the policy was something called mutual assured destruction all through the Cold War. MAD is the acronym. In other words, okay, Soviet Union, if you attack us, when we get our radar and we can see you have attacked us, we will send our weapons out. And so we're both, everybody's going to be destroyed here. And they had that capability. And it was like about a 20-minute window, I think. I've heard different people say different things, but about 20 minutes. Mr. President, it's 2 a.m. We have just got record that reports that the Soviet Union has launched a massive amount of missiles toward the United States. You got 10 minutes to make the call. Are we gonna respond?
Right.
And that's, and you had to figure out, is this the real deal? Is this true? And it never happened. It never happened. Now, we got close a few times. Let me just jump ahead to 1963, which is called the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
We kept getting better and better ways to spy on each other. We usually led the way, but they weren't far behind. And we, with our spying, we learned what they were doing. And we could see that they were building missiles, launching pads, silos in Cuba. And President Kennedy sent a blockade and says, take them down. We're not going to allow that. And so
90 miles off the shore of Miami, Florida.
Right. Now, there you go. And for a couple of weeks, we were sitting on the edge of our seats. You and I were just little boys.
Yep.
We probably didn't understand.
5 years old in kindergarten class.
Yes. We didn't understand the gravity of it all. But in the end, I think the other side blinked. I think the Soviets said, okay, we're going to back down here. And there was a little bit of give and take. And we didn't go to war.
What was Kennedy's, in your study of history, because like you say, we were young boys at the time. But what was Kennedy's actual checkmate moment, if you will, the leverage that he had at the time over the Soviet Union that made him blink, if you will?
Well, we were still way stronger. Our economy, our ability to wage war, we were going to win. If there was ever an all-out war, we were going to win it. Because, yeah, I mean, the Soviet Union was, the people were, and still are, to a large degree, poor. Just like, I mean, they'd have a strong military. They're kind of like North Korea. People are starving to death, but they've got nuclear weapons. That's my view, that Khrushchev did not want to go to war. He wanted to manipulate us, push us, get us to back down. And in this case, John F. Kennedy did not back down. They backed down. And there's a truism with bullies. You got to stand up to the bully. But you want to stand up short of war. But, yeah, we did stand up to them in the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we did not go to war. Now, this Cold War, as you guys know, became a hot war numerous places, especially Korea in the early 1950s and then Vietnam in the 1960s, where North Korea invaded, communist North Korea invaded free South Korea, made a lot of headway. The United Nations, absent of Soviet Union, decided, hey, no, this is a violation of a treaty agreement. And it was technically the UN that went to war. I don't like to say that, but the United States was the main power there. And we went to war, and MacArthur went back and did a lot of things. And the Korean War went back and forth until we really pushed them far. And MacArthur says, look, every time we defeat the communists, the North Koreans, they flee across the border into China. Let me go get them. And Truman wouldn't let him. He did a little bit anyway, and he got fired. Truman fired MacArthur because he didn't obey an order. MacArthur said, look, you want to win this war? There's no substitute for victory. We're going to have to cross this border and go get them. But Truman, like Eisenhower after him, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, they all wanted to avoid the nuclear war. They didn't want to do anything in a war that would absolutely cause us to go to start World War III. And right now, even though we're not exactly in a Cold War, but that's what everybody's worried about. Whether you're talking about giving more aid to the Ukraine or whatever, everybody's worried about taking one step too many in supporting Ukraine and having Putin feel very threatened and push the button or start a nuclear exchange. And what would happen then? Who on earth knows what would happen?
Right.
I mean, would that cause India and Pakistan, who are enemies, would they go to war with each other? How about North Korea? Would they see that as a green light to invade South Korea?
China to go ahead and take over Taiwan.
Exactly. And
the Iran, dominoes on this could be huge.
Yeah, we don't know. I don't know.
But if you connect the dots, the timing of it, again, all boils down to, we have a weak commander-in-chief in office right now that can't deal with all these different fronts. He can't deal with even Russia and Ukraine because of Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. They had this joint session. Finally, they came out, and Mitch McConnell announced that he's stepping down as a Republican leader in the Senate because he can't deal with Mike Johnson. And he said, you guys are just absolutely not seeing the big picture here. And Johnson said, sorry, we're not funding Ukraine until we get the southern border shut down. And that's bottom line, Mr. President, that's what you're going to agree to, or we're going to shut down the entire government. The funding is going to stop because we got to close the southern border. I mean, at this point, politically speaking, Mitch McConnell can't even deal with it anymore. And he's retiring, stepping down as minority leader in the Senate. So
Mike Johnson's, I don't know if everybody understands this. I do. I think I do understand this. Listen, he's got a Freedom Caucus on his right, and then he's got more of the what we'll call traditional Republicans, which are in the big majority of his caucus are more traditional Republicans, which would include General Bergman. He's more of a traditional Republican, conservative, but he's not a part of the Freedom Caucus. He's not a part of – but the Freedom Caucus, though low in number, they can stop anything that Johnson wants to do. So he's got to deal with them, plus the fact that he's got a very slim majority – in the House of Representatives as it is, plus there's a Democratic president, plus there's a Democratic majority leader. I mean, in the Senate. So it's not like, well, why doesn't he do that? What do you mean do? He's got to manage this, and it is not easy. In case anybody remembers, I said when he comes up, he's going to face the same problems, challenges that Kevin McCarthy faced, and he is.
Yep.
Just that is the way it is. Not an easy job here that he's got. I think he's doing a great job. I'm just simply saying it's not easy. And those that don't understand the process, you don't understand the process. I mean, what do you want him to do? I don't know the answer to these things, truthfully. We need to close the southern border, yes. What should we do about Ukraine? Not sure. Who's the bad guy here? I mean, well, it is true that the Russians invaded the Ukraine, but there's an awful lot of history there that most Americans are kind of unfamiliar with, and I'm growing in familiarity with. So it's the world's a complicated place.
Amen. 5 in the hour news break. We'll continue on the other side. He's Pastor Rusty Chatfield. I'm Trucker Randy Bishop. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.